You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. Heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From hockey to wrestling, football to golf, no sport left unturned. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. Neil? The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. This beautiful Sunday morning, and we have Butch Carter in studio. Butch, former coach of the Toronto Raptors. And Wally Regabon is in Florida, and he'll be joining us right now, too. Wally, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks, Naz. I think the weather might be a little bit better where I am, but I'm certainly thinking hockey, let's put it that way. So what do you want to get into, Naz? Let's go at it. Good morning, Butch. How are you, Butch?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much. Got a lot of sports to talk about, Naz, so I'll turn it over to you.
We're going to talk Raptors first and the big trade this past week. Marc Gasol, a Raptor now. But what do you think of that move?
It's you get a really good player. You get a veteran player who's been through the wars of the Western Conference and the Western Conference playoffs. And I think it's a great opportunity for him to come here with the way the franchise is set up and to help them go for, you know, more playoffs wins than they've ever done before and get further. You know, as I told my wife, she asked about it, you know, Marc Gasol is one of the highest IQ players in the league. You know, if you go back and look at his pictures when he was in high school, he was a very, very fat kid. He's basically taught himself how to play basketball. He knows spacing. He can make shots. He can pass. He's going to know how to help his teammates be better players. You know, barring injury or something weird, you know, it's just – It's a good piece. It's a good piece to help.
But Butch, I want to, if you don't mind, I want to jump in there. Marc Gasol is 34 years old. Has been an exceptional player in this league for more or less 10 years. Kind of tough losing Valanciunas because it seemed like before Valanciunas got injured, he was taking his game. But tell us how Gasol's an improvement over Valanciunas.
Well, the issue with Valanciunas is just he's had some really bad injuries that have taken him out, you know, 20, 30 games a season. He was having what I believe was his best year of his 10 years, but he's playing for a contract. You know, the game he played against Embiid in against Philadelphia here in Toronto, his game out west against the Lakers before he got hurt at Golden State, he's just been really good. This is the first year in his 10-year career he could turn over his right shoulder and make a shot, you know, which I've been consistently on him about a lack of development on playing on both sides. I think that, you know, at the end of the day, you're getting a player that's a lot smarter than Valanciunas. And he'll be able to adjust on how the officials are calling the game. I just think his overall experience, he'll add a subtleness with the officials. Opposing coaches have always had a tough time dealing with him because of his elbow catch and what he's able to do off the elbow, drive, pass, set screens. I think he will invigorate Lowry because, you know, when you're a player in the locker room and all of a sudden your management adds a piece like Gasol to what you're doing, and he's not going to be overstressed at 34 because he's going to come off the bench. So as long as he's able to keep, you know, himself loose enough to come in, I think the toughest part for him is you got a first-year coach, and he's got to make all these adjustments on playing time. You know, you trade three guys out that you've been putting in your rotation, but you got a first-year coach, and when he gets in the playoffs, he's going to be coaching against veteran coaches. You know, if it's Brad Stevens or, you know, Milwaukee or Philadelphia or Brett Brown, I mean, he's going to be coaching against more experienced coaches. So I think the only thing to watch is how the rotation works out. And, again, if Serge Ibaka will stay inside the three-point line when he's playing, he's really helped them. I think Serge has had, you know, one of his best years ever when he's played inside a three-point line for the Raptors. So I think the biggest liability is your first-year coach.
Butch, I asked you off air, what an injury means, how long it takes to get back into the swing of things when you're coming off the injured list.
Well, there's two injury scenarios that really taught me a lot. The first one, I was a rookie, and Magic Johnson tears a cartilage in his knee. And I can keep remembering these brutal workouts Pratt Riley was putting him through coming back. But they were all on the offensive end. And then we get knocked out by Houston in a short series. But the real problem was Magic couldn't get down in a stance. And as I told you, you know, the issue you run into with a long-term injury past 4 weeks, a lot of times players lose their two-way ability. They're focused on getting them back, lots of shots, lots of layups. But, you know, they don't spend a lot of time in a defensive stance. And so the second one is traded to New York, and everybody got hurt. I mean, we had seven guys on injured list. Some nights we only had eight guys dressed and we're signing guys to short-term contracts. So it's just injuries, they really throw a franchise off track because there's no consistency in your evaluation. And Valasciunas, you know, it was time to go. And if you're this close to being very, very good, maybe the best in the East, you know, and I don't want to get into, you know, we can argue this one or that one, but at the end of the day, you got to play your way. Everybody's got to play their way through the playoffs. And that's really how what your mindset is of your players in the playoffs.
Butch, you mentioned that you see Marc Gasol's role coming in off the bench. Is that where you see him? And how many minutes a game do you see him starting?
Well,
being introduced to the lineup coming off the bench, is he going to be a starter at playoff time?
Listen, I don't think he's going to be a starter at playoff time, but I would get him 32 minutes, and I would sometimes play him and Serge Ibaka together because Gasol can stretch the floor. He can play the stretch four. The issue is he's smart enough to know how to guard the five or the four. And, you know, the best way to get it, to get things done from, you know, a math analytical standpoint is your ability to build flexibility in one guy not playing one position. Because when you peg guys behind each other, you know, in some scenarios, you know, your top eight, those guys maybe keep coming out as a top two or three and playing their position. So you don't want to peg guys behind each other. You want to build out flexibility and their ability to think on both positions and execute. And Gasol is smart enough to do that. You don't have to worry about that. The issue is, like I said, your first year coach, he's got to figure out, how do I play these guys together? What scenarios do I play them together? And it doesn't hurt us. And, you know, he's got 25 games to figure it out. He's got some practice time, some off time with the All-Star break. I imagine Gasol, if he's not going on vacation, doesn't have vacation scheduled with his family, those two will be spending a lot of time together and watching some film. But, you know, it's the right guy. I think it's the best trade that was made of an import from west to east with a playoff team.
Now, the Raptors have three open spots. How do they fill them? They don't have the depth they did. They traded a lot of their depth away.
Butch. Well, you'll go and sign somebody to a 10-day contract. I think they've got 2 weeks to clean it up. And then you've got the buyout market's going to happen, you know, at the end of the month. So you'll have some veteran players available. Those veteran players, you know, you got to figure out, you know, what you may need. I think there'll be an argument that'll be pitched in the room is, can we rely on our point guard situation being healthy? Right? So, you know, do we need? But the biggest concern that I have, and everyone has, is that they've gone through this spell where they've not shot the three ball very well. And that has to get cleaned up. Lowry cleaned it up a little bit last night, made a little personal statement. I really like what he's done the last two games in Philly and in New York. But, you know, he's a Villanova kid. He's played in those buildings before. But, you know, I think it's in everyone's best interest that Kyle gets back to a good state of mind going into the end of the year and the playoffs. And helps the team get as far as possible.
Do you think Lowry is still hurt? Sorry, Wong. Do you think Lowry is still hurt?
No, I don't. I think Kyle's mad all the time, right? I don't think, you know, anything that, you know, he's mad about is perceived to be a distraction. I just think it's been a consistent state of mind on every situation he's been in. It's his personality. But at the end of the day, the Kyle Lowry that's the basketball player, that's the guy we need to see. I don't care if he's mad, happy. The Kyle Lowry, the, you know, Villanova, Philadelphia street kid, I mean, that's the basketball player we need to see. And when he is that, as he's shown the last couple of games, he's still very effective.
Butch, when the season started, we were, you know, prognosticating, obviously, we thought that the Raptors would be contending, or were the favorites to be first overall in the East. And we thought that they were going to, that the big matchup, who was going to challenge them was going to be the Celtics, just because of the athletic ability on the Celtics. Now the Bucks and the Sixers certainly are in the thick of it. They improved themselves. Also, the Bucks, the last time they played the Raptors, seemed to handle the Raptors fairly easily, and I found that a little bit disconcerting. We're mid-season. We thought it was going to be Raptors-Celtics, and now it looks like it could be Raptors, Bucks, Sixers, or Celtics. How do you see the from here on into the end of the season? How did the Bucks get so good, and how are the Raptors going to manage the Bucks, the Sixers, and the Celtics from here to the end?
Well, the matchup Milwaukee-Toronto, your biggest deficiency is the head coaches. You got an experienced Budenholzer, experienced head coach, and you got a first-year coach, and he made a mistake in the last home game. He went to his zone, which had worked for him on the road, and someone forgot to guard Giannis at the top. And once he went down the middle and dunked with no one willing to come over and touch him, then what happens to the team is they're looking at the coach like, you put us in this mess, right? And maybe the players just didn't execute it. But you get a false sense of hope because out of last resort, Dallas was shooting like 80%. And I'm going to get back to Dallas is shooting 80% in a game. Nurse goes to his zone, right? It stops Dallas from getting in the middle. They come back and win the game, right? Really good coaching, right? He basically went to his backup plan. The other guys were in shock. They couldn't figure it out. They come back and win the game. Well, they assumed that was of natural causes. And when you do that and go into a more prepared opponent, which I consider Milwaukee because they shoot the three ball so well, and so he's got to clean that up. The biggest gap for the Raptors in the playoffs versus another team is Milwaukee. Milwaukee is in the top three in three-point shooting. They have a superstar in Giannis that the officials will continue to blow the whistle for him in the playoffs. They have Budenholzer, who they interviewed and wouldn't hire, so he's personally motivated to have his team beat the Raptors. Kyrie goes down last night. He's going to be out for a while, probably. He may need surgery, so Boston will go back to the team they were last year without Kyrie. We know that group plays very hard. The issue that's going on in Boston is Hayward. Hayward is making a lot of money. It's irrelevant. He's ineffective as a player. He is not the same player that played at Butler. He is not the same player that played at Utah. And what it's done is that it's reduced Tatum's and Brown's minutes. If I was Boston, I would take Tatum and use him as the backup point guard and increase his minutes, because you need what he has, a crossover dribble and an attack point at the rim that he scores even with pressure. So this injury may let them work out their problems, because it takes Kyrie off the board and his issue with free agency, and it lets the other guys play the same kind of team they had last year. Boston, I believe, will beat Philadelphia. They've done a really good job historically in playing them. Stevens, I believe, is a better coach than Brown, has his guys more prepared. I believe the Raptors will be fine against Philadelphia because of Kawhi and Kyle Lowry.
Does home court advantage mean anything?
Butch? Well, the issue for Philadelphia is, you know, if you can stop them in transition in the playoffs and force them to be a half court team, they really have a problem. I just haven't seen the stats on our new trade versus Embiid. Valasciunas ate Embiid up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, best game he had this year was a game here against Embiid, and the officials allowed him to guard Embiid. I believe that Embiid's problem is that he is a non-athlete when he gets in the lane. That's why Boston does such a good job on him. They've got, you know, big, strong kid, that plays well against him. So at the end of the day, everybody's got a race to, you know, put your best team forward in the last 25 games. The team that is the most consistent right now without a trade, a major trade, is Milwaukee.
So is there an opening to add more players of a high caliber?
It's not a matter of high caliber. The issue is, you know, the biggest problem for the Raptors has been scoring shrinkage by their all-stars in the playoffs. That's basically what's been the Achilles heel the last 5 years. So, you know, what you're going to see, hopefully, is Kyle plays up in the playoffs. Kawhi goes back to being his 25 or 26 points a game to allow them to give that consistency. And then it's a matter of, you know, can Siakam be as efficient in playoff games as he is, you know, running up and down the floor during the regular season. And it's just a shrinkage. Toronto as a team has had greater shrinkage in point differential than any team in the last 5 years in the playoffs. And that's too bad.
Wally?
Butch, I know we've got to go to break, and last NBA question. Raptors and Bucks in a playoff series. How do the Raptors stop Giannis, the Greek freak? How do they do that?
Well, it's a Kawhi issue at the end of the day, because you're going to put your best guy on Giannis. But the issue is, if Kawhi is as efficient as he needs to be, you offset Giannis. Giannis hasn't gone off but one game in his whole career and scored 40 points. So he's not a guy that, you know, is going to drop a huge number on you, because he's not that efficient shooting a three-point shot. They're affected because they run Giannis in the lane, or he euro steps from the free throw line in the lane, and the perimeter has four shooters on the outside. That's why they've been effective, very effective. All right. So the real counter, as I put it, the counter is, if Kawhi and Kyle are effective as all-stars as they've been during the regular season, then Toronto will be fine. Then it's going to boil down to, you know, 10 possessions after timeouts and the ability of the teams to execute when the opposing coach and defense doesn't know what they're running. And that's just good basketball. So, you know, in the playoffs, you've got all the computer technology. You know what they're running for the most part. You know they're trying to get certain guys ISO'd, and you're trying to be effective with it. You hope you get your normal free throws. You hope you have your normal 15 turnovers a game on 100 possessions. And you got 85 possessions to be positive. You've got 8 timeouts. So if you look at the 2 possessions offensively and the 2 possessions defensively after the timeouts, you can pretty much calculate where you're going to be. And all you really want to be is in a 4 or 5 possession game. So you either want to be up 4 or 5 possessions, or you want to be down no more than 4 or 5 possessions going into the last 6 minutes.
We're going to take a break and be right back with Butch Carter and Wally.
It was a rainy day in Pizzaville when we received this letter. My marriage is in a rut. Can you help us spice things up? Yes. Get the Gourmet Special. 2 medium gourmet pizzas for just $24.99. He loves Canadian bacon, so he'll order a deluxe. She can order the Italian, because she loves the hot Italian sausage. Everyone's happy.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
There's an old saying: entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carly understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them. Every day, they've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carly, the intelligent choice.
Steel's Paint in Woodbridge, an enormous 20,000 square foot superstore that carries nothing but the best. Superior staff, superior advice, superior selection, superior everything. When you have a really tough job to do, they can knock it down to size. They'll show you how to get it done right, and because they only sell the best of everything, you'll get it done to last. That means superior satisfaction. Steel's Paint, 4190 Steel's Avenue West in Woodbridge, the best.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity in Vaughan. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
The only thing I love more than sports is sports radio. Take it away, boys. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I want to talk about an interesting game yesterday in college basketball, Duke versus West Virginia. And what did you think of that game, Butch?
Well, I mean, they'd built the game up all week, and I'd watched the prior game at Duke when Virginia went in there. And basically what you have are two different concepts by head coaches. The Virginia concept is to have more shooters than athletes. They want to play a lower possession game. And historically, since Tony Bennett's been at Virginia, their ability to shoot the basketball, there's three or four programs that are in rarefied air for shooting the basketball in college basketball. When Bo Ryan was at Wisconsin, his teams were uniquely qualified, shot the basketball better than most people every night, didn't turn it over, won games. Gonzaga has been doing it for 15 years. They shoot the basketball better than everyone else. They have a terrific tournament run in doing that. Villanova, and this year Villanova is shooting 53% of all their shots are three-point shots. They've won two national championships, all based off very fundamental. We're going to shoot the basketball from an efficiency standpoint better than other people, and we're not going to turn the basketball over. So, Butler got to those Final Fours. Didn't turn the basketball over, shot the basketball better than other people. It's a unique formula that's based off a coach or a coaching staff being able to shoot, teach more players how to shoot the basketball well. With the modern-day shooting machines, it's a lot easier. A lot of coaches don't do it because they can't teach shooting. They didn't know how to shoot the basketball, or they haven't hired someone on their staff that knows how to shoot the basketball. So you've got this dichotomy of different philosophies. Krzyzewski, the Nike school, basically let's go get the best horses, let's turn them loose, let's grow the Nike brand, let's grow the Duke brand. And Coach K probably has three or four championships that got away because Duke has not shot the basketball well in the final game of the NCAA championship. So you turn, because the game was so close at Duke, he takes these very good athletes blended together with the skill guys, and they go to Virginia, and they played very well. At the end of the day, I'm more and more impressed with Zion Williamson. He is just a monster athlete with a very high IQ. Yes, he's lacking in some skill issues, but, man, what do you do with a guy that now you can put him in practice, he can run basketball, do nothing but basketball every day, you got full-time film, and you don't have fake classes on this one-year, one-and-done? As I said to you, you know, going back, I think he's in the top five all-time athletes I've ever played in the ACC. Michael Thompson, Michael Jordan, Lynn Bias, Vince Carter, I think he's there. And what I'm really impressed with is he plays with his right hand. He's left-handed, but when he goes below the free throw line, he has the ability to play with both hands. And the most outstanding, he is a great team guy. We've seen a lot of guys with his talent that are just so selfish that they can't understand the importance of the team. And I don't know who his parents are or how he was brought up, but I just see a guy that's full of enthusiasm for his whole team. He doesn't let, he makes the plays that he can make. But when he makes one of those monster plays, when he came out and blocked that jump shot.
The three-pointer.
I think it changed the whole concept of the game.
Yeah.
Right? You know, guys, you can say, well, don't let it affect you. We're like, then you're saying, like, where's he at? Right? It's like one of those scary movies, you know. Yeah. You know they're coming, you just don't know where. So I love the atmosphere that you see in the ACC in those games. The games, in my opinion, are pretty clean. You know, the guys, kids aren't, you know, overly angry. They're played very hard. But, you know, that game was not as good because Virginia did not shoot the ball well. But I think it's from the mental preparation. Duke was ready to go on the road in a tough place and win a game.
Wally?
I don't know if you guys mind. Do a little bit of a Super Bowl wrap-up from last week. Butchers, one question I want to ask you. And first of all, I have to admit that the Patriots humbled me. I bet against them three playoff games in a row, and I don't know what I was thinking.
We just have to say anything you pick go the opposite, and you'll be fine. Hey, Wally?
You know what? That's probably a good way to make money. Just figure out what Wally's picking and go the other way. I just didn't. I mean, to be fair to myself, nobody in the world saw a game coming that would be the lowest points total in Super Bowl history. It just, that where that came from, you know, obviously Belichick and Wade Phillips, two of the greatest defensive geniuses of all time, and perhaps, you know, L.A. Rams that didn't make the adjustments they had to make. But Butch, and, you know, I'll ask you guys your thoughts on the game. Interesting comment made by the Ram coach McVay after the game. And I want a coach's perspective and a player's perspective. He said in the press conference that he was out-coached by Belichick. Would you, when you were coaching, have ever said that in a press conference, that you were out-coached by the other guy, and how does a team react to that?
Well, I would say that during the regular season. I wouldn't say it during the playoffs, but you know, there are games and there are guys. I was talking to someone yesterday in California, and I told him, you know, I had a lot of success against Hall of Fame coaches except Larry Brown. And I couldn't beat the Pacers until Larry left and Bird took over. But, you know, this is how I saw it. You have an old school coach in Belichick, and he basically, the offensive coordinator, all right, for New England, basically schooled Wade Phillips. That what they did with Edelman was run what we call a gap route, right? So Edelman has a choice to find the open space. This requires the offensive line to give the quarterback a little extra time. And all Edelman kept doing was, all right, I'm going to go seven yards, and wherever the open space is, straight, right, left, that's what I'm going to do, all right? And to give you a correlation, if you go back to the Ohio State-Michigan game, at halftime, Ohio State, in the first half, Ohio State was running crossing routes, and Michigan thought they had to stop because they made their halftime adjustment. Well, what happened was at halftime, Ohio State said, okay, you're going to start like you're on a crossing route. They're going to start head run with you, and you're going to peel back. You're basically going to make a U-turn and go back on the same side. So the whole part of what everyone said that I listened to from the Atlanta Falcons, what they said was that you need to get off to a good start and don't become overconfident at halftime because Belichick will make the adjustments. And you got into a dead heat in the first half. Belichick goes in and makes the adjustments. The Rams are still running the same routes that they've run all season. They made no adjustments to how to physically attack the defensive scheme of New England. And Jared Goff is sitting there trying to throw the ball, all right, in the double and triple coverage because it wasn't that they had it down. New England was so good that one of their best defensive backs broke his arm, all right? And still with him out.
Yeah, Chung.
They couldn't complete three passes in a row. Right? So, you know, the young coach, you know, pay homage to the old guy, all right? But I don't think what he doesn't realize is that he never changed his route tree. So what Belichick and him were doing is, hey, look, I mean, you can put a computer on it, and the computer will tell you if they're in this set, it'll tell you the probability of which route tree they're going to be in. So Belichick's an old dog. He's using that technology, all right? And remember, there's one key part in the game that very few people would understand, all right, if you're coaching. Belichick kept saying to his guy, where's he at on the sideline? I can't see him. He's looking for the head coach because I believe they had been tipped off to the signals. Why would you have to know the signal caller where he's at on the sideline? All right? And someone upstairs told him where that, and he says, hey, I got him.
Incredible.
All right?
That's a pretty provocative statement, Butch. Going back to some of the foibles of the Patriots from years past. I got a sense in that game, and you know what? You go back and say they couldn't, you know, Wade Phillips took away everything from the Patriots other than Julian Edelman.
That's correct.
Other than that, but that should have been enough to win the game, quite frankly. I mean, it was, we were what, near the end of the third quarter, and it was a 3-3 game.
But the issue was,
anybody had a bet that the Patriots were going to win this game with only 13 points, that probably wouldn't have been a very good bet. So you got to give Phillips a lot of credit, don't you?
Yeah, you have to give him a lot of credit. But the issue at the end of the day is he's still knocking at the door. You know, he's a bridesmaid.
Well, yeah. It wasn't Wade Phillips' fault. It may have been. I agree with you 100%. The Rams offensive guys failed to make the necessary adjustments. They made the Patriots look like the steel curtain in the fearsome foursome. They made the Patriots look like an all world defense from the old days, and I'm not so sure the Patriots defense is that good.
In football, the two hardest routes to cover are a wide receiver running across the field, and a defensive back has to run sideways. Defensive backs are taught to backpedal and come forward, all right? It's really tough for them to chase a guy across the field. He never ran a guy across the field. They ran Edelman across the field, and then when they start playing that, then he'd come back in reverse, and he'd just gap it. Wherever the gap is, Tom needs two more seconds. The offensive line for New England, they're the one that should get the MVP because they kept giving Tom the time to find Edelman.
The Rams' offense was horrible that day, Butch.
Yeah, it was
horrible. Yeah. And, you know, what? Why is the best running back in the NFL sitting on the sidelines three quarters of the game? I don't get it.
I'm yelling and texting my brother Chris, where is the running back at? What is going on? All right?
He's riding his bike on the sidelines.
And something's wrong there, and it's definitely wrong. If you got the best running back, who's been the best running back for most of the season, and he was really bad in the New Orleans game, which they were lucky to get through, and he's non-existent. You don't have that kind of talent if it's at 100% and not use it. That just didn't make any sense. Gurley saves golf. Golf doesn't save Gurley.
Exactly. Wally?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Butch. That whole Gurley thing, I don't know if anything came out in the last week. And the only thing that made any sense to me was that he was fighting some sort of undisclosed injury of some kind, a fractured rib or a slight pull. And I have no idea other than an injury of some kind. And if he didn't have an injury of any kind, I don't get it. Then you got a question. You got to question the Rams coach. You got to question me, you know, the Rams coach. Well, what was he doing? And the other part about, you know, they managed to control the ball with Edelman. Yeah, they did, but it didn't score them a lot of points. And it you know, the Rams had, there was a stretch in that game in the first half. Early, they punted. They had the longest. They punted eight straight times. And the most plays they had in any series was five plays for eight straight series. Like, what are you looking at? Like, I don't get it. It doesn't, that a coaching staff cannot make those adjustments to generate some kind of offense. I'm perplexed by it, Butch.
Well, again, you have to look at Coach's record against quarterbacks under 25 years old. He's like 17-1. And, you know, that's the dominant, you know, analytic for, you know, you put that old head against a young quarterback, and he finds a way to, you know, to devalue them and their ability to help their team win. And, you know, he went through the MVP. You know, it's tough. The Patriots had the easiest route to get to the Super Bowl. You know, you got a West Coast team that qualifies, and they got to fly in the cold weather, you know, with no preparation. So the Chargers were not ready. They win that game. They go to Kansas City, have to play on grass. Kansas City, as good as they are, they did lose one of their star running backs to domestic violence in the season. But he did take away their best wide receiver. You know, they had prior knowledge because Kansas City had played at New England and, you know, and it played pretty well. But I just think, you know, when Bill sits and looks at the X's and O's because of his whole depth of knowledge, and that goes back to, you know, he's been looking at football formations with his dad. He has seen how things have evolved, how the rules have changed. And see, this is what I believe. They can change the rules, all right? But it's no different than building a prison. You leave a prison there long enough, some prisoners are going to figure out how to get out of it. And Belichick has, you know, found those ways, and some of them have been questionable. You know, did he have people's calls? But at the end of the day, his depth of knowledge from an IQ standpoint and being able to correlate, making a change that deeply affects what the other team wants to run.
Yeah, but, you know,
There's been no one better.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is whether he was stealing calls or anticipating calls, I think it's more of the latter than the former. I think they've sort of learned their lesson over the years. But certainly anticipating calls, you know, Tony Romo seemed to know everything that was coming down. So if he did, I'm sure Belichick knew even better. And, you know, you got to give the Patriots, you know, the credit, if they're not the best franchise, best run in NFL history, you can say that. Tom Brady didn't have a fantastic game. Six Super Bowl rings, you can't challenge that. Belichick, certainly in the discussion with the greats, best NFL coach of all time. Naz, probably just leave the discussion, go to break, and I'll leave it with you guys. You got to give them all the credit in the world. Wow, what a run. And they faced all the challenges, and they meet them, and they bet them. So what else can you say? I won't bet against them next year, Naz.
Yeah, probably that's a good thing. Yeah. Maybe the Bills will jump
up. They probably
up.
Won't be in the playoffs. So. That's the only reason why he doesn't bet against them.
Certainly, Belichick and Brady have humbled me, so I'm going Pat's silent next year.
Yeah, I took New England. Remember, I took New England.
Yeah, you did. I'll give you credit for that, Ness.
Okay, we're going to go for another break on commercial. We'll be right back and talk about the Leafs.
It was a rainy day in Pizzaville when I realised that, unlike pizza, you can enjoy Pizzaville's authentic Panzerotti with just one hand. Pizzaville and its entities, owned in whole or in part, have no interest in knowing what you do with your other hand while you're consuming one of our Panzerotti. Seriously. Get two authentic Italian Panzerotti with cheese and sauce for just $10.49. One for each hand.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
At Titanium Logistics, we believe that choosing the right shipping company comes down to two issues: price and cost. Most prices are competitive. We'll likely save you money too. But the cost of choosing the wrong company to service your cross-border freight to and from the U.S. and Mexico can be extraordinary. If it's not where it should be, when it should be, that bargain price, worthless. Titanium Logistics. On time, on budget. Call 905-266-3014. Ask for Blair Downey.
At 20,000 square feet, Steeles Paint in Woodbridge is Canada's largest independent paint store. Big deal, right? Big deal, yes. The best brands, the best staff, the best advice, the best of everything. From color matching to brand selection, whether you're a pro or a DIYer, we'll look after you from the minute you walk in to the minute you walk in a second time as a completely satisfied customer. Big store, big deal, bigger satisfaction. Simple. Steeles Paint, 4190 Steeles Avenue West in Woodbridge.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughn. I work with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the number 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
The Naz and Wally Sports Hour is a paid program. Opinions expressed on the show are those of Naz and Wally and their guests.
Are they ever wrong about sports? I can answer that in two words. Impossible. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We're going to talk our Maple Leafs won a big game last night, Wally.
Yeah, managed to. By the way, Naz, I usually at the beginning of the show always comment on what you're wearing, and congrats on your Leaf hoodie this morning. I did notice, thanks to the internet and live video streaming. And Butch, you wearing a new pair of glasses this morning?
No, they're just clean.
Anyways, on that note, Naz, yes, I managed to watch Leaf Habs game. They're not that easy to find on the TV down here, but given my technological prowess, I managed to figure it out how to get it on my screen last night. Managed to watch the game. It was a good hockey game.
It sure was.
It was a damn good hockey game. Both ends, some good goaltending, a little bit off goaltending at times. And this could very well be a playoff matchup. And can you imagine, Naz, Leafs, Habs, first round? They go at it like they did last night.
The ratings would be very high if that happens.
Ratings will go through the roof. Let me tell you what, aside from the fact that the Leafs won a road game in overtime, when Mitch Marner picked up that puck, I mean, they fought off that penalty. Mitch Marner picked up the puck. And, you know, this kid's phenomenal. It's just like every time he picks up. And when he picked up that puck in the overtime, I said, something's going to happen here. Mitch Marner's got the puck. And lo and behold, he threads the needle with the pass to Tavares. Tavares goes top shelf on the backhand, and we win it. But there are two guys that will be crucial to any Leaf success in the playoffs. One guy, obviously, the other one, maybe not so obvious, that picked up their game and are starting to pick up their game. Nylander showed a tremendous amount of skill on that goal, on the tying goal last night. And Andreas Janssen's game seems to be heating up. And aside from the difference that Muzzin makes on the blue line, Leafs are on a little bit of a roll, and hopefully they can keep it going against the Rangers. Your impressions, guys?
Wally, did you notice who was on the ice killing the penalty going into overtime on the D?
I couldn't wait for him to say this. I'm so...
I didn't notice Naz. Maybe I should have noticed.
Hainsey and Muzzin were on the ice. Well, you didn't see Gardner, and you didn't see Riley. So,
But they're the go-to guys, Naz. They have to be from a defensive point of view. Hainsey's always, over the course of the last couple of years, always picked up the... he plays a lot of minutes, and he's been their shorthanded guy. And, Muzzin is, obviously is perfect for that role. So, I wouldn't have expected otherwise. Killing penalties. Those have to be your two go-to guys for killing penalties.
Hainsey's been criticized quite a bit of him getting old and not being reliable. Now, he has a plus 29. Plus 29.
I'm not going to say the prize. I like Hainsey's game. He came over from Pittsburgh after winning a Stanley Cup, and it was basically they signed him, and the Leafs lost the guy. I can't even remember the guy's name. Who was the guy that used to have that went to the sign with the Penguins. I can't even remember his name. Anyways, Hainsey came over, played a lot of minutes in the Stanley Cup run with the Penguins. He's played a lot of minutes his couple of years here in Toronto, but you know, to a certain extent, they've had to overplay him. And now with Muzzin in, you know, maybe they can take a few minutes off his game, and he's a good effective defenseman. You know, if you can play him 18 to 20 minutes a game instead of 22 to 24, you're going to get a much more effective player and a much more hopefully rested player in the playoffs. Muzzin, you know what, provides that a bit of a physical presence back there. He's not scared to throw his body around. Slammed Guentzel into the boards in the Pittsburgh game. I thought that sort of changed the game around. So he's got the ability to have some of those forwards on the other team keep their heads up, and the Leafs have been sorely lacking that. So you know what? A little bit of a run since Muzzin came in. Nylander's game seems to be getting a little bit better. I think he's got 6 points in his last 8 games. Janssen is looking like the MVP in the Calder Cup playoffs that he did last year. Marner is Marner. Tavares is on his way to 50 goals. And if Anderson shuts it down at the other end, as you said, Naz, the season goes in cycles and looks like the Leafs may be headed towards an up cycle.
Look at the teams that are not doing well again. Like Winnipeg is three-game losing streak. Everybody goes through this in the NHL, losing streak. And Winnipeg was classified as the nonstop Stanley Cup contenders, right. And now they don't look so good. So.
Yeah, but at times guys get fatigued.
Yeah,
you know, so it's a marathon. You know, anytime you can win a game in the NHL and get to the playoffs, you know, you're climbing a mountain, and you have to dodge the injury bug, right? And then you've got to hope a goalie can see pucks that you know that are supposedly go through the defenseman. And you know, I've always wondered how you hockey guys kill goalies, and you know, goalies are back there dodging, trying to figure out, you know, telling his own guys to get the hell out of the way so he can see the puck. So the win, you know, I don't consider it a statement win. It's a rivalry win. The reality is that Babcock is, with the contract being settled and Marner being a local guy, you know, probably figure he's not going anywhere. Then hopefully the team can settle in, and you know how this conversation started. He had the right defenseman on the ice. You know, that's why he's there coaching. It's a one possession game, sudden death game. Who do you put out there? And you know, he's going to ride or die with them. I thought it was an outstanding decision in a rivalry game that has, you know, a little more rivalry to it, because both of them have players that played in London. On the same team, which is Domi and Marner. So, you know, it adds a little more flavor to it. But Tavares was Tavares. But, you know, Tavares knows he's only as good as the rest of them. And they just need to move forward. This whole thing that Montreal has had an outstanding year, we pretty much thought they'd be in the trash. Weber's playing as good as he's ever played. But, you know, they're a team that's been effective by having more than 10 players with 10 goals. So they distribute the puck very well and been very efficient at it. But, again, you know, you get in the playoffs with them in Boston, you know, it's Babcock has to and Tavares have to set the tone and maintain it. That's always been the tough part when hockey got three lines, playoffs, and you got to maintain it for such a long period of time compared to, you know, six or seven guys or eight guys in a basketball game. And the win was a good win. It was a rivalry win. I don't think it sets any other precedent. If they start knocking down and win 8 out of 10 going home, that's what we'd like to see, and see that consistency. And then maybe every once in a while the old gruffy coach won't be as gruffy in his press conference.
Did you see the argument with the assistant coaches in between periods? Oh, my God.
But
anyway, I was wondering what they were talking about.
Well, it works. Sometimes the assistant coach is actually right, but he's wrong because he gets caught on TV arguing.
They got to watch. Anyways, the two most prominent guys in Toronto this week were Masai Ujiri and Kyle Dubas, obviously because they made some
bold statements, to put it mildly. And we've already talked about Gasol coming to Toronto. Auston Matthews, Naz, they signed him for an $11.6 million
I told you
average.
He wouldn't sign in Arizona. There's
for 5 years, you know what, Naz, you're trying to make, you know, you're trying to embarrass me again. Please don't do it. You're always reminding me that you're always right and I'm
no,
always
no,
wrong.
Not always so, right.
Naz, you don't, Naz, you don't have to remind him. He has a natural talent for doing this.
You know what? Everybody's got a
you, you know what the biggest, you know what the biggest thing that, well, yeah. Just a second. You know what the biggest thing that happened with the trade, the Raptors trade?
Yeah.
If any player that wants to do a GoDaddy commercial, don't do it because you're going to get traded.
Anyways, thanks for reminding me, guys, that my best before day as a sports talk radio host is probably expired already because I can't seem to get anything right these days. But, Naz, yeah, you predicted it. Auston Matthews signed. Caught some people off guard, to be quite frank. The five-year deal. Mixed reaction around the league. I think a lot of GMs in the league might be a little bit upset at Kyle Dubas. Not so much for he seems to have increased the bar. Nylander at almost $7 million. Matthews at almost $12 million. The numbers keep going up, and there's a lot of general managers, specifically the one in Winnipeg, have to look at this and say, oh, my God, the numbers, that Dubas has increased the numbers. The five-year deal caught, I think, some people by surprise. I'd like you guys to comment. Is that deal player-friendly or team-friendly in terms of amount and in terms of term? Your thoughts, guys.
Term, it's player-friendly, all right? And the amount is team-friendly. As he said, you know, they wanted 8 years, right? He basically is saying, I'm going to take the best 5 years that Tavares has. That's five. Mm-hmm. It's not six, seven, and eight, right? So, you know, he was thinking team. What's the team going to look like? And so he picked the number five. And, you know, I think Dubas needed to get it done, and he got it done. It's not exactly what he wanted. It's irrelevant what some guy in Winnipeg is saying about how to run the team in the largest market. Get your team settled and let them see what they can do, you know, with the Stanley Cup over the next 4 or 5 years. And I think that was real simple. I think it worked for everyone, and it got done.
The tough part is going to be Marner because there isn't much money left in the under the cap. They have $13 million left to sign. I think it is six players. They have 15 under contract. So they need $13 million to sign six players, and it's going to be tough to sign Marner because he's going to go for 10 for sure.
Well,
they have no choice. They have to sign Marner.
yeah, but they're going to get rid of. They're going to need to get rid of somebody, and it'd probably be a Nylander or a Marlowe. They're the two contracts that I see, right?
Nylander's a little bit easier to trade. Marlowe, you'd have to eat some of that salary if you trade him. Marner's got, you know, and then you've got Gardner, right?
Gardner's gone. Gardner's gone.
You got to think that he's gone, and hopefully a couple of the guys down at the Marlies are
there isn't already, anybody ready down there, Wally.
Ready for prime time. Well, then they're going to have, because Babcock and Dubas, I think they love Gardner's game. They love the offense that he brings in today's NHL. The fans have a mixed reaction on Gardner, but I don't see how Gardner's got market value. In spite of how much Leaf fans might want to criticize him, he's got market value, and his market value is probably around $6 million a year over who knows how many years. He's not that old, and he can still freewheel out there. So he's got.
They said Phaneuf had market value too. So.
Yeah, well, he got his first healthy scratch this weekend. He wasn't happy about it the other night. He was watching the game in the press box. So good point. Naz, I think I'm seeing about a minute and a half left.
You're right.
Trading deadline's coming up. I don't think Dubas is done. I've heard reports that the Leafs and the Carolina Hurricanes have been chummy in the last 3 weeks. They've been visiting each other, scouting each other's games. There's a player down in Carolina who's rumored as a potential fit-in for the Leafs. Michael Furland. Gritty player, if they can get him for the right price, I think he'd be a good fit. What are you hearing, Ness?
I'm hearing the same thing. But Carolina is in a playoff hunt, too, right? They're only 1 point away from Pittsburgh for the last spot, and Pittsburgh is on the verge of being right out of the playoffs. Who could have figured that out? I think.
Where else do you foresee the Leafs trying to fill? Are they done on the defense? Ashganagov, or the Russian kid back there, doesn't seem to be earning that much. The Leafs done on the D, or
I think they're done.
We're bringing in some physicality up front.
Yeah, well, we only have 15 seconds left, but I think they're done on the D. But look at adding some more depth up front. Well, we come to the end of the show, and thanks, Butch, for coming in. It was a great, great hour for us.
Thanks for having me.
No problem, Wally. Thanks. See
thanks
you next
for
week.
Thanks for having me, guys. Always a pleasure.
Okay,
have a great week, Butch.